I'm 23 and I'm still a virgin, and it's all come down to this.
Echo Brown is joining me in studio. Her fabulous show, Black Virgins Are Not for Hipsters, is running at the Berkeley Marsh through the end of June. And I managed to see it the other night. It's really amazing. Echo, this show is dealing with the intersections of racism, colorism, gender, sexism, sexuality. It starts with your experience as a recent Dartmouth graduate living in New York City. Talk about what was going on for you at that time and sort of what were some of the things that led you to want to write this show.
Yeah, so I lived in New York City right after graduation in 2006, and it was a very confusing time. I think graduating from college and then entering the real world is always a confusing experience because, you know, nothing can really prepare you for the impact of how the world works. And I think a lot of colleges, in particular Ivy League schools, have this idealism and they tell you certain things and they say, go save the world. But then when you actually get out there and you see how things work, it's actually a little bit different. So at that time, I was an investigator. I was investigating the police and just trying to find my way in the world. What led me to this show was I initially thought I was just going to write a show about how much dating sucks in the Bay Area. So I was going to talk about my OkCupid experiences and all these different things. But in the process of writing it, all this other trauma started to emerge. So this stuff with my brother being in and out of prison, my self-esteem, which is related to my dark skin color, my nappy hair, all these different things that you get shamed for appearance-wise as a Black woman in this society. So yeah, it kind of just evolved into a very different story.
You said at the Q&A the other night that you did not do any theater training, neither in college nor post-college. So how did you know that theater and writing a one-woman show was the thing to do to work out some of this stuff?
Well, the thing is, I didn't know. So I knew I needed to find my way to some kind of stage. Either I needed to write a book or I needed to, you know, try to write poetry. I knew I needed to tell this story or tell the story that was inside of me. So I basically just started asking around. I literally started asking my friends that do theater work. I was like, where can I write a one-woman show? Like, where should I go? And eventually in the process of asking around, somebody told me about the Marsh in San Francisco, that they have these classes called Writing and Performing Your Own Solo Work with David Ford, who has worked on tons of solo shows in the Bay Area and is just a genius and is just brilliant. And I'm really grateful to have found my way to him. So I just started taking a class. I literally walked in off the street. I said, David, I want to talk about how much dating sucks in the Bay Area. He said, well, tell me more. And here we are.
You have so much talent. I'm just really thankful that you found your way to the Marsh. One of the things that's really awesome about the show is how you transition from light and funny to these really deep and very highly emotional, you know, very moving pieces about your brother, about sexual violence, about your own experience being told, being given those messages that you weren't attractive because of your skin color and, you know, classism and other things. And you seem to have a great instinct, or maybe it wasn't instinct, maybe it was a lot of work, but you seem to have a great feel for when to shift the energy.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of how much heavy stuff people can take and then how to transition it so that it doesn't feel totally abrupt. Was that a difficult thing to get to, or did that come naturally to you?
So that actually comes really naturally to me as a performer. What you're talking about is this kind of energetic exchange that's happening between me and the audience. What it feels like for me is I can actually feel what the audience feels. So I can feel when the energy drops, and then I play into the heavier parts. And I can feel when there's a when humor is rising, so then I push that up in the characters or in whatever part I'm doing on stage. Like I can... It's hard to explain in words, but I can internally feel within myself when there needs to be more humor, when there needs to be, you know, more intensity, and I play those moments up throughout. And that's why the show, even though I've been running it for the past over a year now, still feels so fresh and still feels like it's the first time I'm doing it every night, because I'm actually energetically plugging in and merging with the audience. And so how the material is delivered from night to night feels different based on the energy that I get from the audience. And that's all instinct. You have to be able to move yourself out of the way. And it's a complete kind of feeling experience. I'm not thinking, oh, should I be funny here? Or, oh, should I be intense here? I just feel it, and then I just go with it.
Bay Area audiences, theater audiences, tend to be pretty white and older, I think. At least that's been my experience. Maybe it's the shows that I go to. But how has that been for you, or has that been who your audiences are? Are you bringing in a different crowd? And, you know, if you are performing for a majority white audiences a lot of times, how is that for you talking about things that, you know, other black women, for instance, would relate to so differently?
Yeah, so the good thing about this show is it has really diversified the Marsha's audience a lot. So I would say my audience has been about anywhere from like 60%-ish diverse over the course of my run. So I've had a lot of diversity in terms of race, of course, gender, of course, you know, people from just all different kinds of backgrounds have really come and embraced this show.
So as you mentioned, the show deals a lot with issues around colorism and the way in which darker-skinned women are made to feel unattractive. I mean, I was a little surprised. I thought, oh, isn't that kind of old? Like, I thought we were getting past that or something, but apparently not. So can you talk about how those messages were given to you as a kid?
Yeah, we are definitely not past that in any way. There's tons of colorism, not just in America, but everywhere, all over the world. It's why you have a billion-dollar skin cream, you know, lightening industry in all these different countries. I got a lot of those messages from everywhere. So I got it from people in my family. I got it from school. I got it from the entertainment business, from TV, how you never see a dark-skinned woman being the love interest or being the girl that's being chased. You see her as either all these older stereotypes that we have, she's the mammy or she's over-sexualized, but she never is allowed to be this kind of whole person that you desire in this way. In the black community, where those messages come from, it's actually internalized racism. You take it out on other people who are darker skinned because those messages have been programmed into you. So then you take out those same messages onto other folk. I recently had a couple black men that came to my show who were darker skinned who said they received the same kinds of messages, you know. So that just goes to show how pervasive it is, and that it's everywhere, it's all over the world. For whatever reason, here on the planet Earth, we have decided that black skin equals less than, equals less attractive, less desirable, all these different things. And so people who live in darker bodies pay the price for that in a lot of different ways, you know.
So as you mentioned, you were working in New York, you know, at the time that the show takes place, that the story takes place. You were working in New York as an investigator. You were investigating police misconduct. Were you working for the police department itself, or were you working for an outside agency?
No, I was working for an outside agency, and it was an independent agency.
There were air quotes around independent people.
Yes. But at least how it used to be, I don't know if it's the same today, almost 10 years later, we used to send our our investigations to the police department, and the police department would decide if and what the punishment would be. So even though we were, quote unquote, independent, the police department still had a tremendous amount of power over our investigations.
So what was it like for you as a Black woman doing that work? And I'm curious, because I think that that was mostly before the Black Lives Matter movement really started and before there was so much national attention on the police relationship to the Black community. You know, what was it like for you to do that work, and how have you related to, or, you know, what are your thoughts about the movement and the conversations that are happening now?
You know, in the beginning, I was very optimistic. I was idealistic. I had just graduated from Dartmouth. I was on my way to change the world. And I didn't yet understand structures of power and how things actually play out in the real world. It became difficult for me after 2 years of doing that work to have complainants, most of whom were young Black or Latino men, coming really needing help and not being able to help them in the way that I wanted to help them. So that's how I knew I had to leave that job. And in terms of the movement today, I think that the Black Lives Matter movement is just the next part of the civil rights movement that's been ongoing in this country since the beginning. You know, I think in America we have these uprisings around race every generation. This generation, it happened to play out with the Ferguson stuff and, you know, what's been happening with killings all around the country. But it's not like it's anything new. It's not new to the Black community. I think it's just the next evolution of a movement that's been going on since the beginning of this country. I think that until we really deal with the root of race and we really get to the core of it and we really look at how it's built into so many of our systems, then the next generation will have their uprising and it'll be another movement and it'll be another name. And we'll just keep on going like that until we get to a point where we really do the work to transcend it. We have not really done the work to transcend race in this country, I think.
And some of that is touched on in your show in the characters of the hipsters. And I was surprised that someone in the audience during the Q&A didn't know what a hipster was. So I tend to assume that our audience does know that, but maybe I shouldn't assume that. So what's a hipster?
I think the definition is changing, but I think a hipster is just a young person who is really interested in being on the forefront of culture. They want to be hip. They want to be super liberal. They will probably be voting for Bernie Sanders. They don't think of themselves as a hipster. But at the same time that they want to be on the forefront of the liberal movement and politics, they may not be aware of how they are playing into the system. So they may not be aware of their own privilege. They may not be conscious of the ways that their own behaviors and activities actually contribute to some of the problems in society. So it's the combination of wanting to be hip and liberal and on top of all of those things with this kind of unconsciousness when it comes to identity and race and all these different things, consciousness in a real deep-rooted kind of way, not the, just this kind of tokenism, I'm for all the rights of all the people. Like, you really got to get down into the core of it and understand how you as an individual are contributing to these structures of oppression, because I think we're all upholding these structures of oppression.
There's a bit in the show that takes off from The Color Purple, the classic novel by Alice Walker. Alice Walker came to the show, I understand.
She did.
I would love to hear about how that was, but what was significant for you about that book and about the character of Mister?
Yeah, so what was significant about The Color Purple, the book and the movie, is that it was the first time I think I had really seen what I had been experiencing in my life in terms of what was happening with the Black women around me. So in terms of having to bear the weight of the abuse in the community of, you know, trying to uphold Black men and trying to hold the community together while also bearing a tremendous amount of abuse, you know, I think that was the first time I had seen that reflected back. There's a lot of skin color issues in that movie also. So I related to a lot of the characterizations in there around that. in my own internal voice, in my own internal mind, I always had this voice that told me, you're not good enough. You know, you're too dark. You're too ugly. Nobody's ever going to want you. You know, you have African features, which to some people is degrading or is not attractive, you know. So I think within the show, I took that kind of negative inner voice that I had around my appearance and I put it into the character of Mister, because in the movie, that's what you see. You know, that is the character that is beating down the women, telling her she's ugly and nobody's ever going to want her. And I think that everybody, every woman has probably has some kind of internal voice when it comes to self-worth and stuff like that. I think the only difference is that with as women of color, there's just another level.
So what was it like to have Alice Walker come to your show?
Well, you know, first of all, I did not know she was in the audience, and thank God, or I would have royally freaked out. So I found out that she was in the show. She stayed for the Q&A, and then she was the very last person to raise her hand. And she raised her hand and basically started giving me these compliments about my performance and what I was doing. And then I noticed her, and I said, is that Alice Walker? And I was just completely shocked. And it was, you know, for me, it just represented to be able to meet like a childhood hero, like somebody that you read and you admired, you know, like Maya Angelou and Toni Morrison and all these people, all these black women who had such an impact on American culture by telling our stories in such a real and authentic way. So to meet her and to have so many Color Purple themes in my show was just, I mean, I basically didn't sleep that night. It just meant so much to me, you know, and the fact that I never imagined myself meeting somebody like that or imagine any of this for my life, because I didn't really dream this big, you know, when I was younger, growing up in Cleveland. So it was really, it just really was a monumental moment for me.
Echo Brown is my guest, and her show is Black Virgins Are Not for Hipsters. It's running at the Marsh here in Berkeley. Black virgins are not for hipsters, but on some level they are for hipsters, because the show is built around the relationship that you're just starting with someone you call Ryan, and he's the lumberjack version of Ben Affleck. That relationship, you said, actually lasted for a few years. And one of the things that he's telling you in the course of the show is, I wish you could see how beautiful you are. What was it like to get those messages and not be getting them from a black man?
You know, I think it's complicated. I think it's complicated. I think that's why one of the big reasons it's so complicated to be a woman of color is that you're fighting all the battles. You're fighting the race battle. You're fighting the patriarchy battle. And sometimes some of the men in your community are not actually fighting that battle with you. Sometimes because of the structures that we live in, those men become opposed to you. So it's complicated. I know when I was younger, when I was up until basically the age of 16, I always imagined that I would end up with a black man. I always fantasized about black men and thought I would marry one. And then there was some kind of shift that happened for me when I was around 16, because I had gotten a lot of abuse from black men for how I look and for all these different things. And there was a shift that happened. And I remember I was watching Full House one night, and all of a sudden I was attracted to Uncle Jesse. I said, this is new. This is different. So it's complicated, you know, and it was very strange to have this person be attracted to me and be able to reflect this beauty back to me in this way that had never been reflected to me. And I really want to emphasize that before this person that I talk about in the play told me I was beautiful and reflected that back to me, I have very little experiences where that was reflected back to me. So that's why it was transformational. It literally could have been, you know, it could have been anybody. It just happened to be that that was the person that I fell for and the circumstances aligned and everything like that. So, yeah, I think it's really complicated, you know, and I try not to throw anybody under the bus in the show because I understand how these things came about. I understand internalized racism. I understand projecting that onto black women when it comes to beauty. So I get where it comes from, but it's just, it's a lot of layers and it's really, really complicated.
Your mother, as portrayed in the show, does not want you to be sexual. She wants you to stay focused on your career, first your studies and then your career. And you're saying, yeah, well, I can do those things and have sex too. your family saw the show. What did they think about it?
They loved it. I premiered the show in Cleveland, January 2015 at the Cleveland Public Theater. And they all came. My mother came. My father came. My youngest brother came, not the brother that you see in the show. And they loved it. I mean, it was unanimous. I mean, but the thing is, they would have loved anything that I do, you know, because I come from such an oppressed, impoverished environment in Cleveland where people don't get to live out their dreams, where people don't rise above oppression. You know, they go crazy or they get into drugs or they get killed. All these different things happen to them that prevent them from rising to their full potential. So for my parents to see me on stage in that light, to be telling basically our family story in a lot of ways, you know, it was transformational for all of us because I represent a break in the cycle. Generations of my family has been trapped in poverty. Generations. My father's father was a sharecropper. We come from a line of slaves, you know. And so for me to so totally break that oppression and blossom and go to Dartmouth and do all these different things, it just represents so much for them. And to see it on stage was the visual representation of that. It was the visual representation of my blossoming as a human being. And I'm so happy that they got to see that, you know, that all of us got to share that experience.
I'm curious why you ended up choosing to go to Dartmouth, which I don't know very much about, but it's sort of my impression that it's one of the most conservative of the Ivies, even of the Ivies, like that it's not sort of the countercultural Ivy like Brown.
Yeah.
So why Dartmouth?
You know, I wish I I wish I had a better story. The reason I chose Dartmouth, I applied to, I think, about 14 or 15 schools, and I was accepted to all of them. And really why I chose Dartmouth was a combination of really liking the pictures on the front cover. A lot of this was me imagining what college was going to be like. I didn't have anybody in my family that had gone to college that could advise me. So I was just imagining, and I knew I wanted to get out of the concrete of Cleveland. And then part of it is I went there for Dimensions Weekend, and that's a weekend that they put on for the minorities. And they bring out all the minorities on the campus, and they say, look at all of our diversity. They get you that way. And, you know, and so I just felt that really accepted and included, and I felt like, oh, this is a place where I could really, you know, excel. And I think that Dartmouth does try with diversity. I think that they, you know, in some sense do have a commitment to it, but I think they can try harder. I think all colleges and institutions can try harder, especially to provide support for people like me that come from such a traumatic and crazy environment that really there's a lot of emotional and spiritual support that is needed. And there is some support on campus for that, but I think there's a lot more support that can be provided.
After this run at the Marsh, what next?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a couple things up in the air. The biggest thing is I'm writing a book. I got this book agent from New York. I was in talks about this kind of web series. There's a possibility of taking the show to New York. I'm performing the show this summer in Europe. I'm going to be in Dublin and in Berlin performing it. I just got invited to do a TED Talk for the Peace Plaza, the Peace Plaza one. There's different, all these different versions of it. So that's on July 16th, and I actually had to fly back a little earlier from Europe to be able to do it. So those are the biggest things. I want to make a documentary about my family and some of the circumstances that I come from and eventually write a new show.
Anyone going to your show and probably taking your classes would see a really self-possessed, optimistic, upbeat person. And yet in the Q&A, you talked about periods of profound depression. And it was really interesting to me because I just read this long article about Sandra Bland. I think it was in The Nation. Great article, I thought. And it, one of the things that the author said is that Black women have the highest incidence of untreated depression of any population in the country, because there's this whole like myth around the strong Black woman,
right,
or mystique around that Black women are supposed to be the rock. And what helps you deal with depression?
I think think I had to first come to terms with the fact that depression is actually a mental illness and that it's an imbalance of my brain chemicals. So that change in understanding helped me be a lot more gentle with myself. Instead of thinking to myself, you know, just get over it and just go out and do the things you need to do, now I take the time and I say, okay, this thing is happening. What can I do to take care of myself today? What can I do to be gentle with myself today? And that is a huge shift in my mindset, because I used to be, and I still can be, so hard on myself. I'm like a, you know, I'm just like a pile driver with myself. And so what, you know, what helps is I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of yoga. I've considered medication in the past. I have not been open to medication, but recently, after some other episodes and after some other things, I have considered medication. And I think it's just a matter of figuring out how to stay balanced and how to keep my expectations realistic and how to not put too much on myself. And how to have a better relationship with negative emotion. So what happens for me is I have all these different things that I have to deal with. When my brother gets out of prison again, you know, he's getting out in July. When my youngest brother tries to kill himself, or when, you know, my parents don't have enough money to pay their bills. These are real life issues that can really mess you up, because it's your family and you care about them. And, you know, I'm not able to take care of all of them. And so what happens is I get into this negative cycle of thinking, and I just start thinking so many negative thoughts about the world. And then I just slide into this depression. The difference now is I have an awareness about what's happening, and I can see it from the beginning when it first starts to happen. I see that first trigger thought. I feel that first emotion. And then I say, okay, I need to stop and take care of myself right now, right here, before I get down into that dark place, you know? And also, you know, the other thing I want to say about that is I think in America we have this idea that everybody should be happy and bubbly and positive all the time. I don't believe that. You know, I think that there is a place for all these negative emotions, fear and anger and anxiety, but I think that they have to be balanced and properly integrated within the human being and the human emotional system, and that there has to be a place for them to be expressed properly. And if you can get to that place where everything is integrated, you can get to this more healthy place, which is where I am now, where I allow these emotions. I don't criticize myself for it. I don't shut them down. If I need to cry, I cry. You know, if I need to be angry, I yell in my car. I let my emotions move through me instead of suppressing them. When I suppress them, they turn into depression. This has been a long journey for me. I'm sure that this is something that I'll be working to balance throughout my life. But I do think that, especially as a Black woman, it's important to speak about that, because, as you mentioned, there's just so much pressure put on Black women in the community to uphold the community. My mother is like that. She's the pillar for our family. And also the combination of being stripped of your vulnerability, of not being seen as soft, of not being seen as capable of breaking down, of not being seen as having the same softness, you know, as maybe white women. That combined pressure creates this system where there's nowhere for you to go to ask for help, and where people don't believe you, or people don't understand the depth of what you're going through. So I feel very grateful to have, you know, to have a lot of tools to help me when that stuff starts happening. Whereas in the past, I just didn't have the tools. So I was just sitting in it.
Echo Brown, Black Virgins Are Not for Hipsters, playing through June 18th at the Marsh Theater here in Berkeley. You have to see it. You can find information at virginhipster.com or go to themarsh.org and click on Berkeley and then choose Echo Brown. You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael.